irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, that is a great piece of music, and I have to say that I wish my fingers would move that good on a guitar anymore, but they don't. Welcome to another wonderful evening of broadcasting here on LA Talk Radio. You are listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host in residence, Jim Christina, and my other host, Bobby Jean Bell, is, of course, on the phone from beautiful downtown snowy Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yeah, we did have a little snow, but it's all gone. Now we were, I don't know, 50 degrees today, but the leaves are down. We have a lot of leaves in our yard. We have one tree, and it just decided to finally just drop its leaves this week.
Oh, my God. I have a lawn guy, and he's been out here twice now doing leaves.
Yeah.
And finally, my tree decided to crap all of its leaves. So he was out there today for, I want to say a good hour and a half.
Yeah.
Bagging leaves. Holy mackerel.
Yeah,
I never knew one tree could have so many leaves.
Yeah, that's the thing.
and it's been like in the 20s.
Oh, has it?
Yeah, it never got above like 39 today, 40 maybe. Tomorrow's even going to be colder. It's going to snow. And I mean, it's just not. Well, it's okay for me, but Jerry hates it. She hates the snow.
Yeah.
So, hates the cold, actually. But anyway, how you doing there, BJB?
I'm just breathless because, as I said a couple moments ago before we went on the air, I just literally read the last page of tonight's book. So I haven't even really had time to process it. And you know, what a great book.
What a good story. Huh? And, you know, it's like nothing I've ever read before. So and I said the same thing last time she was on. So
I know.
She seems to be that kind of writer. She'll write things that she'd never heard before.
Yeah, well, and some reviewers said this should become sixth Agatha. What a twisted turn book. Really great.
to hedge our bets here, this woman has been on TV forever. She's got 26 or 36 Emmys. She's an investigative reporter. A writer of, I don't know how many books. She's a New York Times bestselling writer. Oh, just welcome back to The Writer's Block, Ms. Hank Philippi Ryan.
Yeah. I love this. I could listen to you two forever. This is nice. I'm just sitting here in my office in Boston, just soaking up the niceness.
Oh, well.
Thank you so much.
We haven't
got
to the show
words.
Yet. We're fixing to pounce on you here.
Oh, dear. No. Okay. I'm very afraid.
No.
Jim, I have to say my husband is a big, big fan of your books.
Oh, is he?
Yes. I came in to call him to dinner a couple of weeks, maybe a couple months ago. And he says, you know, just a minute. And I said, what are you reading? And it was one of your books.
Really?
So I don't even remember which one, but he just devoured them. So
good.
You have a fan here in Boston, two fans here in Boston, at least.
Well, excellent. Well, you know, my latest book, which is called Jefferson's Chance, one of my favorites. I don't know if you've got that one, but it's really a great book.
I don't think we have that one, hint, hint. So I can figure out how to get it.
Jefferson's Chance can be got anywhere they sell books online or Amazon.
I'm opening my computer right now.
There you go. Jefferson's Chance. Got a great cover, too, I might say.
Mm-hmm.
My wife designed the cover.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
So... And you can tell by the cover that it's about the Texas Rangers. Actually, it's more about their creed and their credo and instead of the heroes. So
who is Jefferson?
Jefferson is a young 23, 24-year-old Texas Ranger, brand new Texas Ranger.
And it's his chance, what, to make good or to...
Jefferson's chance to be a Texas Ranger.
I love it. So conflict instantly, right? Stakes instantly.
Well, that's because he only has one leg.
Yep.
And he has to have a leg specially designed for him and then made for him that allows him to move and operate like a regular leg. So you can't tell he's got a false leg.
Where do you come up with this stuff? Your writer brain is so amazing.
I had the story just like Jonah Blue. I woke up and I had an entire story in my head and from start to finish. And that was the book.
Wow. How do you remember it? Did you write it all down really fast or type it up really fast?
It wouldn't go away. It stuck with me. But I've talked to other writers that do the same thing. They'll wake up and they'll have a dream, and the dream will be the entire story.
Mm-hmm. Or songs.
Yeah, well, I'm
songs
still waiting
poems.
For that to happen to me. That did not happen to me.
You know what? It'll happen, Hank. It'll happen.
Because you know what the good part about that is? If I have a dream that tells me a perfect story, that means I'm going to get some sleep. And that would be very good
that
as well.
Possibly what happened with me. I'm not the world's best sleeper. So, you know, if I go to sleep and I go to sleep hard, I usually have stories running through my head.
Mm-hmm.
So
this is a special kind of brain. It's just a special kind of brain. No
well, and it was a brain without gin. So I did once slur my dream. No.
You're he's out of control now. You know this.
I know. Trying to figure out how to get us back.
I know. Between the two of us, we should be able to do it. I'm not quite sure.
It doesn't take a lot, Hank. But to bring me back in, just jerk the chain once or twice. You know, I'm here. So you have your new book. What the hell is
the
it?
The First to Lie.
Okay. I'm not going to get into the book really deeply because it's got so many things that you give away so easily. You've been searching for a passage that you'd like to read, and I don't know if you found one.
I did, but let me tell you a little bit about it. I do think you're right that it's impossible to talk about a thriller without giving it away. And I've thought about this and really worked on trying to be able to give readers or potential readers some idea of what the book is about without telling it. So let me try this on you.
Okay.
I saw a thing on Twitter that said, describe your book in 4 words.
Mm.
And so... obsession and revenge.
Yeah, you got it.
What do you think about that? And then there was another thing on Facebook, which is crazy, which shows you I'm on social media too much. There was a thing on Facebook that said, describe your book in 5 phrases. So how about this for The First to Lie? A devastating childhood betrayal, an undercover reporter who's in too deep, a beautiful sailboat on the Chesapeake Bay, a rich and powerful family, and an ice pick that is not used for ice.
Yeah.
So bottom line, it's two smart women facing off in a high-stakes psychological cat-and-mouse game to prove their truth and get their revenge for a devastating childhood betrayal. But which woman is the cat and which woman is the mouse? And that is The First to Lie.
Mm, you got it.
Yeah.
But see, I didn't give away one thing.
You gave away nothing. Very good.
No.
Very good. I tell you, the story is, like we've talked about before we went on the air, Bobby and I've never read anything like this. And I think we said that the last time you were on.
Yes.
With your last book. We've not read anything quite like this before. And it keeps you interested for sure. And it keeps you bound to that page, and it doesn't let you go.
Well, thank you.
Which I think
you know,
is the mark of a... Go ahead.
Well, it's interesting, and thank you for that. You know, it's one of those things that I've been a reporter for 43 years, and the thing about being a television reporter is that you have to take a lot of complicated stuff and make it entertaining and important and compelling and irresistible, and sort of change the world with it a little bit, and you know, in a little bit of a different way when they finish it. And in the end, you want some justice, and you want to change the world a little bit. And it's exactly the same thing in investigative reporting as it is in writing crime fiction. All of those storytelling elements come into play. So after having been a reporter for, I guess it was 30-some years when I started writing fiction, gosh, when I was 55, 15 years ago, I knew how to, I didn't know how to write fiction. I know that's a softball. I didn't know how to write fiction, but I did know how to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
And I also know the other thing about the news and writing for the news is that even though there's a way that you tell a story, the thing that makes the news interesting in my world, in investigative reporting world, is that every story is absolutely different. You know, it's new. It's a new story. You're not telling the same story over and over because that wouldn't be new. So right. My challenge as an author is to do a story, is to write a novel that's a Hank novel. I mean, there's a Hank DNA to the books. They're all about justice and revenge and obsession. They're about truth, and they're about loyalty and all those kinds of things. But think of all the different ways, you know, if you had a Rubik's Cube with all those elements, all the twist that you could do to make a different book, because each book has different characters with, you know, everybody wants something, and it's a question of how far they'll go to get that thing. So once I decide what the sort of milieu is, of course the book is going to be different. Of course it is. They're standalones, and it's the most important thing that ever has happened in these characters' life. Unlike a series, you're never going to encounter these people again. This mm-hmm, is the mm-hmm. time of their lives that you need to know them.
Right.
And that's what's so powerful about writing a standalone.
You're right. And you can make the character as strong or as weak as you like, because you don't really have to meet him again.
Well, you know, and that's exactly right. And unlike in a series where you know your characters and you know the milieu and you know what they're doing, and it's essentially just it's another adventure of a person or people that you know who is and where they are. But
right.
In a standalone, it's a brand new world with brand new people, and anyone could be good, and anyone could be bad, and anyone could start out good and wind up bad, mm-hmm. and anybody could be lying, and anybody can die. Anybody can die, because this is one time only, so it is all on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our readers are smart. They understand the contract that we make as crime fiction authors, that we're going to give them a good story with a satisfying ending and some surprises, and we're going to close the book and say, ooh, that was good, right?
Yeah.
Right. Isn't that right?
What else has she written?
But exactly. But the thing that's so critical about that is that you really need to have it be, to feel like a Hank story, but make it be different. And that since our readers are smart, they're going to try to guess along the way about what's going to happen, because they like to say, oh, I knew that. You know, I could figure that out. I knew that. And so our job as authors is to say, watch this. You know, you think you know so much and you think you can predict this, but watch what I'm going to do.
Exactly.
I'm going to pull the rug out from under you. And that's the fun part. You know, that is really the fun part of being a reader and being a writer.
Which you do rather adroitly, I might add.
Oh, thank you.
It's good. Because once again, it the page doesn't let you go. It keeps you there.
As a reader, sometimes in books, the author will clearly tell us, I'm taking you to another time, and now I'm putting you back today, and now I'm going to take you back to, you know, childhood or whatever. You have a way in this book, we encounter these characters at different times of their lives, but the way that you set that up in itself is kind of mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, I think, go ahead.
No,
I love hearing this.
Yeah, it's you see the name at the top of the, you know, title, whatever the chapter, a name is usually what you use at the beginning of the title. So you say, okay, this is about Ellie. Okay. But suddenly you're like, wait a minute, but what time in Ellie's, wait a minute, is this still happening now? Or are we looking at another time in her life? And you start to see how you weave all that together. And as a reader, you begin to understand kind of the convention of how this is going to go. So as you go along, you go, okay, I get it. Okay, now I'm at this other time.
Well, it's interesting
for me that that was a whole nother layer as a reader.
That's great. That's wonderful. I'm so pleased that you enjoyed that. You know, we were very careful, my editor and I and publisher were very careful to label the parts that were before as before. They say before. And now you know that when you're reading about Brooke and Lacey, it's before. And mm-hmm. when you read about Nora and Ellie, it's now. And that's very clear in the book. I don't know if you had an advance copy or if you had the final copy, but in the final copy of the books, those are those big labels. So it'll say, now, Nora. So you know exactly where you are. And we did that on purpose because, you know, the story is a lot of puzzle pieces, you know, and smart readers like you know how to put that together. And it's all labeled so you know what they are.
Well, and what's fun is when you go back, when I have time, I often want to do that. When I'm breathless at the end of a book, it's like, wait a minute, there had to be some, was there a clue about that somewhere?
It's so funny that you say that. One of my very favorite things to have happen, and it happens all the time, is I get emails and letters from readers who say, when I finished your book, I started at the beginning again because I thought, how did she do that? And when you do, for instance, in The Murder List or in The First to Lie or in Trust Me, if you read those books and go back to the beginning knowing what you know, it is just as much fun to read them the second time because you will see, and I pride myself on this, you will see that everything is there. Everything is sometimes the answer is absolutely stated, but the reader, you're so thinking that it's something else that you don't notice it. But going back knowing what you know, you'll smile and smile because it's all there.
We have to stop right there. We're going to be back in just a minute, but we're going to take a real quick break. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block, and we'll be back in the studio with Bobby Jean Bell and Hank Phillippe Ryan right after this short word from LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And you know, these days of coronavirus and COVID-19, as you're sitting home at your desk doing your job, how about instead of watching reruns of Lassie and the Lone Ranger, you tune in to www.latalkradio.com and listen to what our hosts have to say during the day. We've got everything from sports to music to self-help to, well, we even have talk. So why not give us a try during the day, latalkradio.com. And remember, every Thursday night, 6 p.m. Pacific, right here on LA Talk Radio, is The Writer's Block. Have a great day.
And we are back. It is now 6:20, and we are on the line with Hank Phillippe Ryan and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell. And the number here in the studio, if you want to call and talk, is 323-203-0815. Again, that number is 323-203-0815. So, Hank, I'm kind of getting that the first read through your book is more like a magician's trick.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to
like,
put it.
You have to, like, it's like you're sitting there and it's an audience magician that comes to the audience like the Magic Castle in L.A. Mm-hmm. And they do magic tricks right in front of your face and you still can't catch them at it.
I love that image. You know, and I've seen that before. You know, obviously, the wonderful magicians who you think, wait a minute, that can't be.
Exactly.
And Sue Grafton used to call that the magic of writing as well, that you're saying something, but there's a lot underneath it. You're seeing the tip of the iceberg, but the readers don't know how much underneath that iceberg. You know, that why do we read mysteries? You know, it's a puzzle. We want to find out what's going to happen. I mean, that's what I have no outline when I write my books. I don't have any idea what's going to happen next, not at all. And that's what gets me to the computer every day. You know, I think, ooh, I wonder what's going to happen next. And the only way I can figure that out is for me to write it.
Gotcha.
So it's a surprise. So, you know, when people say, wow, the twist in the middle and the twist at the end, you really surprised me. I say, yeah, wasn't that a surprise? Because I surprise myself every time. And, you know, that's a treasure, isn't it? That idea that our imaginations can come up with something new. That's such an original thought that we even surprise ourselves. How does that happen? It's just kind of, it's our subconscious at work and the magic at work and the muse at work, and all those kinds of reasons that we've decided to be writers, you know, to tell a story so that other people can read them and share that world that we make.
Right, right. I have heard being a writer, especially a mystery writer, being likened to a Rubik's Cube. Everybody thinks they can pick up a Rubik's Cube and do it the first time. And thank you for playing, because that's not going to happen. A good mystery, it's not going to happen either. You're not going to figure it out until the very end, and then you sit back and you go, ah, damn, I should have seen that.
Well, you know, I remember very clearly when I was, 11 or 12, I think reading for the very first time Murder on the Orient Express. I mean, I remember that. I remember thinking, wait a minute, how did Agatha Christie do that?
Right.
I never saw that coming. It makes perfect sense. You know, you go back and read it again and you see all the clues completely there.
Yeah.
Because we're trained. We train ourselves as story listeners and storytellers, and then as readers as we get older. What the bones of a book are, what to expect, and we rely on those expectations, I think, more than we know. And so, when an author can play with that and understand, well, the reader is going to think X, Y, and Z, so watch what I do now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're writing it. I mean, I am at least thinking about what my readers might be thinking and on that a little bit.
Okay. That was going to be a question I was going to ask you a little bit later, but I'll ask now. When you're writing a book, do you write for yourself? Do you write for your readers, or do you write for your ego?
I write for the story. To find out what's going to happen next. You know, I start with a premise. You know, what if this or what if that or what if this happened? And I just like watching a movie unfold, you know, I want to see what happens to these people that I care about. You know, I set up a character that you care about and a high stakes problem that needs to be solved. Mm-hmm. And then I think, okay, how am I going to do this? And I want to see the end. You know, how many times have you been watching a movie or reading a book and somebody interrupts you and you say, hang on. I just got to see the end.
Right.
And that's what I'm writing for. But I'm getting to that end with the same passion and the same joy, I hope, that the reader is. You know, that's all in there. My delight with the story, I hope, comes through on the page. And when things unfold, you know, when things unfold and I'm writing and I'm typing so fast that I'm misspelling most of the words because the story is just coming out on my good days. On my bad days, it's just like I do have very bad days all the time. But on the good days, when the words are pouring out and I when I finish with my 1,000 words and I think, what was that? And I read it and I think, wow, that happened? And, if someone had told me when I started writing that that kind of a thing would happen, I would not believe them. I mean, that just sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like automatic writing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I was at an event a year or so ago with Stephen King and Lee Child, of all, you know, gods in the pantheon. And they both separately said that, that there were times on their good days that they really felt that they were actually channeling something else. They were actually mm-hmm. channeling the character, that they were merely transcribing mm-hmm. what was coming to them from they didn't know where. Mm-hmm. And I have definitely, on my good days, I have definitely felt that too. I mean, that's, and you can't, you know, writers know you can't make that happen.
No.
You can't sit there and say, okay, here I go, I'm going to channel. And that doesn't work. It doesn't work. You have to allow it to happen. And I do think, Jim, that's what you were alluding to when you talked about first-time authors, is that they think something is just going to happen. And
right.
It's work. You have to understand the structure and understand the architecture and understand the rhythm and the music of a book and how a story is told, and then do that. And it's very difficult.
Especially, I think when you're writing a mystery, because mysteries really are, I mean, they're so convoluted and there's so many twists and turns in them. A Western's a little bit different. I mean, you know, get him up, get on your horse, get off your horse, shoot somebody, get back on your horse.
Oh, that's not true. Come on.
No, it's not true.
Yeah.
But, but when you say channeling a character, it brings up a conversation we've had with almost every writer on this show, is that, especially when you're writing series, you get to know your characters so well that they start taking over the book. And if you may not, you may be a pantser like I am and like you are, you go, you know where it's going to start, where it's going to end, and kind of like what's going to be in the center. But as you try to go there, the main character will go, nah, we got to do this.
And you're lucky. Okay. I mean, I don't, you know, unlike you, I'm not as lucky as you are. I don't know the end. So that is, you know, so that's a tightrope. You know, that's walking, that's having chapter one and having no idea.
Right.
But I do think that there are times in series, definitely, and in standalones as well, if you know your character, they're going to, I mean, think about it. Who a character is and what their personality is and what their desires are and goals are all revealed. That's all revealed in the decisions that they make, right? It's
right.
The decisions they make.
Sure.
And so when they're faced with an obstacle, will they choose, you know, choice A or choice B? The good person choice or the bad person choice? The you know, the risky choice or the not so risky choice? The brave choice, you know, or the cowardly choice?
Sure.
And that's what all those choices are, what makes the story advance. That's what makes action and conflict, and that's what makes stakes. So that's, you know, when the character comes to life and has intent, you know, has intention and agency, that's when the book starts taking off. They have to want something and go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe so. And, you know, I think a lot of mysteries, especially really good ones, translate very well over to the old Clue game. You know, I mean, there's a reason that Clue is so popular. And I think it's because, you know, you get all of the clues in front of you, but it takes you two or three times of the game to figure it out.
And I think
mystery is the same way.
Yeah, and I think also in mysteries, though, in Clue, as the, you know, as you get Colonel Mustard and as you get the conservatory and as you get the rope or whatever, there is only one answer.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes,
in real life and in mysteries, things are not what they seem. You know,
yes,
Colonel Mustard might actually be someone else, or the rope might actually be old and broken, you know, or the conservatory might have leaky windows. You know, all those things that you might not, that you can add to make the story be surprising.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I love about writing psychological suspense as well, because my books are psychological suspense. And what we do to each other, the mind games and the gaslighting and the manipulation and the deception, you know, mm-hmm. that's just as destructive as a knife or a gun. You know, mm-hmm. what we do to each other as human mm-hmm. beings. You know, so I don't, you know, I default on the side of not graphic violence. I don't have graphic violence in my book. But what people do to each other and why, you know, for revenge or for money or for power or for obsession or for desire. You know, those are the things, that are real, motivations, and also relatable, realistic, possible things that happen. And that's what the first to lie is full of. You know, what is more desirable to some people than the need, the obsession to have a family and to have children? And what if that is taken away from you by a promise that's broken? How angry would you be about that? And what would you do about it?
That's
what I try to plumb in the books, the depths of emotion of the characters and why they do what they do.
Okay. We're going to take another real quick break. And this is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block and to our writer tonight, Hank Philippi Ryan, and, of course, with Bobby Jean Bell. And we'll be right back here in the studio as soon as we hear this quick word from Out West.
Readers Wanted. Want tonight's featured title, The First to Lie, by Hank Philippi Ryan? Or any books by the Writer's Block featured authors, easy. Just go to outwestshop.com. Choose books and CDs from the toolbar, and then from the drop-down menu, click Shop Out West on bookshop.org. The Writer's Block book list features titles of our guests. Click a book cover for the link to the interview and to purchase. Explore all our book categories like seasonal favorites, where we've created a master list of books for the holiday. One-stop shopping supports Out West and independent booksellers when you purchase books through our bookshop.org affiliate website. Remember, it's always a great day out West.
It is indeed, and it's going to snow here tomorrow, so that's going to be a great day. We are back in the studio with Bobby Jean Bell and, of course, our guest tonight, Hank Philippi Ryan. And if you want to call and talk to Hank or me, or I don't know why anybody would want to talk to me, but Bobby Jean, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And again, that number is 323-203-0815. Hank, let's switch gears a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Let's talk about your process, your writing process. When you write in the morning, you write in the afternoon. Do you do what's your favorite place to write? Do you sit on the couch with a lap thing and a laptop, or do you use your office, or what?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I started writing, however many years ago it was, 15, I sat here at my desk. I have a beautiful antique semicircular huge desk that looks out over a window with a big sugar maple tree. And I love writing here in the silence. You know, as a reporter, I've written stories. You know, I've wired myself with hidden cameras and confronted corrupt politicians and gone undercover and in disguise and followed SWAT teams and fires and murder. And I, you know, written stories in the pouring rain and hurricanes and, you know, blizzards. But in writing fiction, I like it to be quiet. I like to, you know, if I hear my husband walking down the hall, I think, don't stop here now, just keep walking. So I like it to be very quiet. I hear so many authors say, ooh, I wake up really early and write at 5 a.m. And I'm like, oh, I can't do that. No. I think, actually, I'm a nighttime writer. I'm really best starting at 2 o'clock in the afternoon-ish. And going through like midnight. And I think the reason for that is, after having been a reporter for so many years, a television reporter, my stories are on at 6 and 11. And so my adrenaline, my writer adrenaline, starts revving up in preparation to be on the 6 o'clock news and then to be on the 11 o'clock news. And I think after all these years, somehow my synapses in my brain start jumping at that time, sort of knowing that that's my deadline every day, even though it isn't anymore. Mm-hmm. So I'm pleased with that. You know, I do a lot of administrative stuff, answer fan mail and do my blogs and for my first chapter fun with Hannah Mary McKinnon on Tuesdays and Thursdays and Jungle Red and Career Authors and those things I do. Calendar is set and I talk to the publicist and those kinds of things. And then when it gets to be about 2 p.m, I think, okay, you know, I sort of make an appointment with myself that this is going to be my writing time, because it's a job. It's my job. I love it. I can't live without it, but it is a job. And if my book isn't in on time, then the editor is behind and the copy editor is behind and the publicist is behind and the, you know, the distributor is behind and the cover maker is behind. So, you know, it's my responsibility to provide what goes inside those covers on time. So I'm very organized and very focused and very determined. And I allow myself to succeed every day. And that's how I do it, is that I cut the, you know, I don't think about writing a whole book. I think about writing, well, actually 540 words a day, because that's how many days I have to write my book, divided by the time I have to, by how many words in the book. And that turns out to be about 540 words a day. And I have a chart that I have to fill in, you know, have to because I say so, that gives me my, that tells me whether I've done my 540 words. And my reasoning, the psychology behind that, is I allow myself to succeed every day. You know, when I write my words and I say, yay, I did my 540 words, and I feel good, and I feel that I feel that I've conquered it and I'm proud about it, then I think the next day I'm going to do even more. So it allows me to feel good every day when I do my job as a writer. And so that's what's kept me going for 15 years. I have a word chart for every book. I started doing it that way, and I am still doing it that way.
That's fascinating.
A lot more organized than most writers we talk to.
Well, you know, I do it out of self-preservation, actually, Jim,
sure.
Because, you know, I've been working on deadlines for years. If
sure.
I didn't have a deadline, I'd think, maybe I'll go get a manicure. You know, maybe I'll just read a book. You know, I don't really need to do this now, but now I need to do it now. And I'm the, you know, when we have, you know, in our real jobs and day jobs, we want to make the boss happy, right? That's what we
sure.
do. So in our jobs as writers, I'm the boss and I'm going to make myself happy. And there's nothing that makes me happier than having written my words. And having written my book, that's what makes me happy. So why wouldn't I do that every day?
Well, sure. Sure, I get that. Especially when the smoke is flying off your keyboard and you're thinking, holy crap, I think I have beat my 540 words today.
There's nothing better than that. You're so right. To do more than I have to do,
sure.
That means it's really good. Now, I have to tell you, because it's just us, I have to tell you that my book is due on Monday.
Oh, wow.
And so, because of the pandemic, which really stopped me a little bit, I have to say, I was really off the track a little when the pandemic started. I'm a little bit behind. So I will certainly be done by Monday, but the next couple of days are going to be some pretty fast typing, I got to tell you.
So you truly will have smoke coming off your keyboard.
Oh, yes. One can only hope.
I saw a really interesting video on your website. You have a terrific website, but I thought it was so interesting. You shared about why you will often read the last pages of a book. not a book that you wrote, you know.
Well, it's funny because, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I wondered if you wouldn't mind just chatting a little bit about that, because I thought it was so interesting.
Well, that was my TEDx talk. It's on the TED Talk website and also on my website, a TEDx talk that they put on the TED Talk website because it has 58,000 views now. So that's pretty astonishing. But the key of it was that as an author, we talked about this a little bit earlier, and this is completely apropos of that. As an author, I love to deconstruct people's books and see how a really good author arrived at the ending they chose. So I don't have time to read books twice. So sometimes I'll read, now don't tell anybody this, but I do say it in the TED Talk. I'll read the first chapter, and don't do it with my book, ladies and gentlemen. Do not do this with my book. Oh, it's only if you're an author. I read the first chapter of the book. Then I go to the end, to the not the last chapter, just the last page. And sometimes that will be very revealing. And then I go to the beginning again. Sometimes I do read the whole last chapter, actually. And then I go to the beginning again and read it, and that way I can, so it's not so much cheating and reading the end first, it's more like research, it's like educational. It's like I'm able to, I know where the author is going now, and I see how they got there. And it is really enlightening because you see all of the clues and all of the careful architecture and construction that the author has done along the way, foreshadowing, you know, laying in the groundwork, establishing things. You don't notice it because it's seamless when you're reading it. It just seems like the story. Mm-hmm. But if you care about how a story, how a book is constructed and structured, the best way, one good way of doing that is to read the end first and then and then start, go back to the beginning and read it through with that knowledge. So, I mean, I'm a special kind of person with that because I don't like, as I say in my TEDx talk, I don't like to be surprised. And so when people say to me, I can't tell you the end of this movie, but it was really good, I say, oh, yeah, go ahead and tell me. I don't care if I know the end, because it doesn't hurt it for me if I know the end. It makes it better. Mm-hmm. And there are people who are, I know I can, all your huge audiences out there going, no,
yeah,
don't do
we
that.
Have them and they're saying that. See, I'm the same way. I don't mind knowing the end.
Yeah.
Everybody says, well, I don't want to do a spoiler alert on it. Well, you're not. Just tell me what the end is.
But most people, and I say this very specifically and very earnestly, because putting a spoiler in a review is really the worst possible thing you can do. So as authors, we can all talk about the ends of books and how the reader, how the author got there. But to write a review of a book and give it away really makes me cry. It is heartbreaking. I want you all listeners to know it is heartbreaking for the author to see a spoiler in a book. I mean, you had fun reading that and being surprised by that. So let the other readers have the fun of reading that and being surprised by that. A review is not a synopsis. A review is how it made you feel.
Exactly.
So when you say character X, wasn't it a surprise when character X dies on page 100? I'm like, no, don't. It was so hard for me as an author to get there. Why would you give that away? It just brings tears to my eyes when people do that. Doesn't it to you?
I don't like it. I've only had one review that they gave away the ending of the book or the one thing that really got me from point A to point B to point C. And it's like, oh man, really? Did you really have to do that?
And then
the guy says, well, you know, this was a Western that could have been $5.99 instead of, you know, $12.99.
That's his opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to separate. I mean, I am thrilled. Whatever people's opinions of any book is, that's fine. There's something for everyone, and every book is not for everyone. I embrace that. If you don't like it, you just say so. That is fine.
Sure.
But don't say, don't tell the end and don't tell the twist.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I agree totally. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Well, you know what? We got one more ad we got to get through, so don't go away. Hang on. This is LA Talk Radio. We'll be back with the Writer's Block and Bobby Jean Bell and Hank Phillippe Ryan right after this word from Creative Edge.
Hi, Jim Christina from the Writer's Block here with some great big news. If you're an author or inspiring to be one, then you better check this out. Creative Edge, one of Canada's top boutique publicity firms for authors, is now expanding. They are dedicating themselves to promoting authors, indie and traditional, in all walks of life, all genres, and they're looking for all opportunities. Owned by Mickey Mickelson, Creative Edge has the passion, the contacts, and the knowledge to help authors and other artists build their brand and get their work noticed. You can contact Mickey at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com to get started. Or you can go to www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge Publicity. It's your brand. It's your future.
And that is the truth. And we are back with Hank Phillippe Ryan and Bobby Jean Bell and myself, Jim Christina. And we have 5 minutes left in this show. So in this 5 minutes, let's talk about what you're reading right now, Hank, or if you are reading anything.
oh my golly, of course I'm reading, of course I'm reading. You know, it's interesting because one of the things that happens when you're a writer, and you know this, is that it's very difficult to read a book just for fun, because I'll read books and I'll think, oh, don't make it be the sister. No, you made it be the sister. Don't do. I wouldn't have done that.
I do the same thing.
Right?
No, you can't do that.
Or you say, you know, is something going to happen soon? You know, like, really? I'm turning the pages fast. Or I think, wow, this is really good. I'm not as good as this person is. Why am I even writing? Why do I even think that I could do this? And I start spiraling down this, you know, writer envy thing. So it is a different experience as an author. I am, you know, The First to Lie, which just got a starred review from Publishers Weekly, I have to put in. The First to Lie is my 12th book. So I kind of have learned what it means to be a good book, you know, how that can be. And I've learned to challenge myself. So I challenge myself in my writing too. I just finished reading the new Lee Child and Andrew Child book because I did a big interview with them and they were fabulous, The Sentinel. So it's the 20th Jack Reacher. Mm-hmm. And I just interviewed Sarah Paretsky for her book Deadland. And that is a really, you know, that's, I think, her 20th V.I. Warshawski book. You know, another wonderful series. I came late to Ellie Griffith's The Stranger Diaries, which I completely recommend. A really wonderful gothic academic mystery. And I read Andrew Wilson's A Talent for Murder, which is, he's so brilliant. And this is one of those books where you think, ooh, I should have thought of that. Agatha Christie is the sleuth. What a good idea that is. So I'm trying to envision my TBR. I have the new Jilly McMillan on my TBR pile that I'm really pleased with. I can't wait. I love her books, Jilly McMillan. And I just finished Ruth Ware's One by One, which is her sort of take on And Then There Were None, the famous iconic Agatha Christie book. And Ruth Ware is, you know, she's astonishing. A wonderful storyteller. Ooh, and Lisa Unger's Confessions on the 745. You know, sort of a riff on Strangers on the Train, Strangers on a Train. And it's also quite excellent. So, yeah, my TBR pile is way, way too high. And because the new Michael Connelly is coming, and that's wonderful, too.
One of my favorite authors. I would love to have him on this show.
Yes, well, I'm sure he'd love to be here. You know, he just consistently, I think he's working on his TV stuff quite a bit now, though. So
yeah.
Probably pretty busy.
Well, we're big fans of the Bosch TV show as well, so.
Oh, absolutely. Irresistible.
Nothing better. Nothing better. Well, you know, we've already had, what's his name? John Sanford on.
Oh, he's great. One of my early favorites, right? He was, so simple.
What a wonderful guest. What a wonderful guest he was. He truly was. And he just, I mean, you know, we've had Craig Johnson from Longmire. We've had, Craig's been on like 3-4 times.
Well, he is so charming, isn't he? I mean, the thing about Craig is, you know, he looks like a big cowboy, but he's not the most intelligent, you know, well-read, well-educated, eloquent, you know, philosopher that you could ever talk to. I've interviewed him so many times, too, and he comes to Boston, and we hang out, and he and his wife are great. I mean, this is one of the wonderful things, isn't it? And you know this so firsthand, you two, about how supportive and enthusiastic people in our world are.
Yes.
In mystery and thriller and suspense world.
Yes.
You know, we're all such big fans of each other, and that's so great.
You know, we weren't expecting that from John Sanford, and he was just so gracious.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a really good time with us, and we had a really good time with him. And so I was really happy to be able to, and he was a throw-in for another author.
Wow.
His publicist says, well, how about if I throw in John Sanford? No, you don't throw in John Sanford.
No, you bow and scrape and you roll out the red carpet for John Sanford.
Anyway, we're out of time, unfortunately, Hank. So you want to give our audience your email and your website addresses?
Well, I'm on Facebook at Hank Philip Urien Author, at Facebook and Twitter, on Insta and Twitter at Hank P. Ryan. My website is HankPhilipUrien.com. And please check out First Chapter Fun on Facebook and The Back Room for wonderful author panels, and my blogs Jungle Red and Career Authors. Career Authors, wonderful for people who really want to make a career out of being an author. Lots of wonderful information there. And if you go to my website, HankPhilipUrien.com, and click on Contact, that comes right to me. Nobody in between. That email will come right to me, HankPhilipUrien.com.
Well, thanks for staying up so late with us. I really, there was so many more questions I wanted to ask, and we ran out of time so quickly.
Well, let's do it again. My new book comes out in September.
Well, so get a hold of the bookie and she'll
get it
book
on
you.
The calendar.
She'll book you and we'll get you back on. Again, thank you so much, Hank. It was a hoot having you.
Always my pleasure. Thank you both. I loved it.
Thank you.
Well, we love you too. And have yourself a great rest of your evening.
You too.
Okay. Bye-bye. As Hank Philip Urien, and she's in Boston, Mass. And her book is called The First Lie. And it's available on Amazon, at her website, and all the online booksellers. And I'm sure you can probably pick it up at Barnes & Noble and wherever it is if you happen to have a bookstore around your area. Next week, we have a really great author. She writes about the Old West women. Her name is Chris Enns, and she's got several books out on Old West. I think you know who she is, Bobby.
Oh, my gosh. How fabulous. You have Chris on next week? Oh, my gosh. Fabulous.
Yeah, and so make sure you listen in and call in if you want. She'll be on the line with us. We have talked before, but she's never been on the show. So I'm looking forward to that. And, of course, next week is the Russ week. So, you know, call in if you want to, Bobby.
I would love to say hello to her.
Or we can just include you as well in this particular show if you'd like.
Well, that would be lovely.
Well, I will. I'll let Russ know that we're going to have a 3-person getaway. And he loves being on the air with you, so it's not going to hurt anything.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Okay, so we'll have Chris.
Yeah, because that's the week before Thanksgiving. I can't believe how fast November is just flying by.
Well, next week is the last week before December.
Yeah.
Anyway, y'all have a good evening. And it'll be Gene and I, as you'll hear with us next week, along with Bobby Gene and myself, and with Ferronin and Sam Hassan and LA Talk Radio and the Writer's Block. We are out of here.